Welcome to the UK's only weekly FM radio show on transportation. I'm Mark Ovenden. Today we're looking at why we need to fight for transit improvements and what kind of transit is even missing and how to successfully campaign for changes. Our guest has some of the answers to these questions because he's a leading transit advocate. Welcome to the Catchcast, live from Oakland, California, Carter Lavin.
Thank you so much, Mark. It's great to be here and chatting with you and your listeners about what they can do to help make transportation better in the UK and wherever they are.
Well, it's very good to have you on the UK airwaves, Carter, and we are going to tackle those questions. But I always ask all my guests this, and I hope you don't mind me asking. Tell us a bit about your background first. Can you remember when you first got interested in transit?
Sure. So I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I lead a group of about 14,000 transit riders, transit advocates. I've been co-leading it for about 6 years or so. And ever since I was a middle schooler or a high schooler, I've been a big transit supporter because I really saw firsthand how when you're able to walk to where you need to go, take the bus to where you need to go, or the metro, the whole world opens up. You know, I was 14 living in the suburbs and able to take the train into the big city to take tap dancing lessons. You know, that changed a lot of my life. You know, made me better tap dancer, things like that. Not that I'm particularly good, but it was just one of those things when you have transportation, when you have access, you have the whole world, and how people of all ages and all abilities really deserve that. And at the end of the day, you know, it's not complicated. It's like, okay, so we need to have transit service. We need to have protected bike lanes. We need to have the infrastructure and the service ready so people can actually do it. And if you build it, people will use it. Like, okay, cool. So then how do we get to those things? And, you know, growing up in the United States, having moved around to a lot of different types of communities, you know, I really saw firsthand how the built environment shapes our lives really profoundly. And so it's important for us to shape the built environment.
I think that's amazing that you were noticing this age 14, because, you know, transit does open so many doors, or opens all doors if you can get around. What did you do with that when you were beginning to think about your next stage in education? Did you take any of that into your, did you call it high school, university life? What did you study?
Oh, yeah. So I went to Georgetown University, which is in Washington, D.C., and I was in their Science, Technology, International Affairs program focusing on energy and the environment, because as a teenager, I got initially very concerned around climate change. You know, this was when Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth, all that stuff was really getting started. And I just remember doing the math of being, you know, 16 or 17. They say, you know, one day this is going to be a big problem for our grandkids. And just saying, well, I'm going to be alive in 2030. This is not a future generations problem. Or yes, it is a future generations problem. It's also a me problem. This is not a hypothetical issue. And okay, let's spend a lot of time working on this. And so, you know, as a teenager and looking into, okay, what are the sources of climate change? What's causing it? Well, it's fossil fuels and deforestation. It's like, well, people are working on deforestation. You know, other people are working on saving the Amazon. We still need to do that. What needs to happen on fossil fuels? And learned, okay, well, we need to get people out of cars. We need to make it a lot easier for people to go car-free. And we need to get clean energy up and running and help electrify the grid and clean the grid. And I had this experience as a teenager where I went to Atlanta, Georgia, looking at colleges. And I just remember this visceral response to seeing all the cars, all the freeways, and thinking, you know what, I'm not ready as an advocate, as an activist. Like, this seems like too gargantuan of a task. I'm going to work in the solar industry, which I started doing in 2006, and worked in solar for 17 years. And, well, as a side project, kept doing transportation advocacy, fighting for bike lanes, and kind of small things that got increasingly large over the years. And then a handful of years ago, I made the switch from clean tech space to the transportation space full time, because we really need to move the needle a lot faster on transportation improvements, because it's still the biggest part of climate emissions.
Absolutely. But you've done your groundwork, if you like, working in solar. I mean, that's a fantastic thing to have done. Tell us why you think that renewables are the way forward then.
Yeah. I mean, so fundamentally, we live on a finite planet. Infinite growth on a finite planet doesn't exactly work. And we do have all this clean, free energy coming from the sun. We do have the wind. We have all this, these sources of power. And the question is, okay, so how do we harness that to make sure that we are not choking our planet, that we are not polluting our water at the same time? And so it is a matter of time that, you know, humanity and large-scale society switches to be 100% clean powered, which several countries have done, and several countries have gotten to be above 70% clean power and things like that. And my home state of California has done a huge work on it. And so it's a matter of time. And the question is, okay, is that 500 years from now? Is that 100 years from now? Is that 20 years from now? And what are we doing to unlock that potential? What are we doing to speed up permitting process so when a family wants to put solar panels on a home or a car park or something like that, that it happens very quickly rather than, oh, you have to fill out 5 years worth of paperwork. Mm. So the clean energy revolution is happening. It's here. And one thing that I learned through my years in it is just because you're right doesn't mean you're not going to get your clocked clean by some larger, more established entity. Just because you're right and you're saving lives and saving people's money doesn't mean that some entrenched political power isn't just going to slap you around the room. And so if we want to win, we have to fight. And a big thing is that there's so many movements, the civil rights movement, all sorts of movements throughout history that have learned how to fight, that we can learn from and say, okay, well, why does a protest work? Why do people do marches? What is the purpose of these things? Why should I go to my governor or my elected official's office? And why do people sometimes chain themselves into the office? And why do people sometimes just walk in with a suit and tie? Like, let's talk about this. Mm-hmm. Let's understand this. And more importantly, let's teach other people this, because you and your listeners want all sorts of things to be better in the world. Mm-hmm. Great. We know how to fix those things. We know how to make tube service better. We know how to make bus service better. We know how to make our streets safer. That is an engineering question. Those have been solved. The issue is, okay, how do you get your MP or how do you get your local councils, your local elected officials to do that work? It's like, well, knowing how to get politicians to do things is also something that is a known and solved problem. The issue is, how do we make sure that the people whose values we share, like you and your listeners, how we all know how to do this work. And this is why I wrote the book, If You Want to Win, You've Got to Fight, Guide to Effective Transportation Advocacy, so that more people can make the changes that they want in their community.
Now, we are going to have to take a short break in a second, but I think I read recently that the US recently generated more energy from renewable than fossil fuels, which is amazing for us to hear about this over here, because it's not the sort of popular impression of the US, is it?
No, I mean, and we are a large petro state, and much like the UK, used to be a very coal-dominated country and is changing a lot. You know, but if what a person knows about transportation or energy is over 10 years old, it's very likely wrong.
Mm. We are going to get to all your campaign work soon, Carter, but please tell us, you've got a board game or something similar to that in development. Can you tell us a bit about that, please?
Sure. So for the past few years, my co-creator and I have been working on Influence, Work the System, a board game where folks can pick the political fight of their choosing and be in the driver's seat of a campaign. A lot of times, politics seems very confusing to folks, and at the end of the day, politics is just what they call engine building in the board game world. So you start off with very few resources, you acquire some more, you learn some new things, you get more resources, you score points. That happens in a lot of board games. That happens in a lot of politics. And so our game Influence Work the System has been playtested at a lot of different conferences. Some professors have told us they love it. So we're working on refining that. The world of politics is very, very big, hard to fit into a small box for a board game, but we're getting there and we're always looking for more playtesters.
Hey, that sounds like great fun, and I'd love to be one of your testers. We now want to hear about your transit advocacy. Can you first of all outline how you see the state of public transport in the US right now, and what are some of the options that could be done to improve it?
Sure. So it's the best of times, it's the worst of times. It's no secret that the United States federal government is extremely hostile to clean air, cities and communities getting around more efficiently. So that's not great. However, at the same time, never before have there been more Americans and people in the United States who are so desirous for better bus service, safer streets, easier ways of getting around. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people out there who want kids to be able to walk to school, who want to be able to take the bus to the pub or to the bar with their friends and take the bus back and have a good time. There's a lot of people who want high-speed rail connecting them regions throughout the state and the country. And so, more importantly, is a lot of those people are doing the work or rolling up their sleeves to start to organize locally for the better transportation, which is why I wrote the book, If You Want to Win, You've Got to Fight, A Guide to Effective Transportation Advocacy, so people have an easier time going from being, you know, from saying, oh, gee, shucks, I wish this thing were different, to saying, gee, shucks, I wish this thing were different, and now I know how to actually campaign and win that, whether that's sidewalk or a bus-only lane or anything like that. And so, you know, people throughout the United States are doing all sorts of things, whether it's building benches for bus stops themselves and installing them in their community, which in the Bay Area, there's a group that's done that at 150 bus stops throughout multiple counties, and there's groups like that all over the country, or whether it's transit riders working together to organize for better conditions for transit riders and transit operators, the union members. And there's lots of folks creating new groups, working on everything from reforming parking policy, which is not exactly the sexiest policy, but it's one of the most impactful things that shapes how our communities work and look and feel, to people working on things like better high-speed rail throughout California or reforming things around our monstrous car sizes. So the good news is, as I say in the book, there's a lot of progress to be made. It's very easy to make things better because there's a lot of things to improve. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, there's a lot of people out there who are good people who want to do the work. And so if you want to win, you've got to fight is there to help them out.
Wow, that's so reassuring, because it definitely isn't a side of American life or politics that we tend to hear about outside the US. And I mean, there are parts of California and other big cities as well that do have subways and light rail, don't they? But then again, there are mile upon mile of suburbs or smaller cities where there really is no option really but to drive a car.
Yeah, I mean, so I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, which the whole region is larger than the whole Netherlands. And so, yes, you can bike from tip to tip in the Netherlands. And I've done the big month-long trip and biked 100 or 800 something miles there. And the Bay Area, it'd be nice to be able to bike from Santa Cruz to Yuba City. But at the end of the day, like, California is the size of many European nations. Mm. Many United States states are the size of European nations. And so when looking at transportation throughout the United States and trying to think of it with the European mindset, like, you know, you compare London to New York, you don't say, well, what's happening in France versus what's happening in rural Russia? Mm-hmm. You know, there are parts of the United States that have more people than rural Russia and are, you know, also similar farmlands and things like that. So it's a gigantic country. And something to keep in mind is, and as I interview people throughout this country for my book, you know, there are people in these small towns who are in these, as we call them, you know, tiny blue dots in a sea of red, these small communities in otherwise very conservative areas, who are pushing for bike lanes, because guess what? They also don't like when their kids are killed by cars. And, you know, they interview this activist in a small town in Oregon who she just started out, as she self-described, as, quote, that crazy bike lady. And she talked about how she went from being, quote unquote, that crazy bike lady to building out community, working with others, which I talk about in chapters 3, 4, and 5 of my book, along with a lot of other examples, and went from being this one solo person to building a crew, to building a network, to winning grant funding, to getting changes in the community and shifting the culture. Because that concept of, oh, we don't do that here, you know, we're not, oh, London can never be Paris, or we can never be Amsterdam, or whenever Maastricht, or whatever. It's like, yeah, and those places weren't those places beforehand. You know, we shape culture. So if you're a community, it's like, well, we're a place where seniors don't bike. It's like, okay, well, get 10 seniors on a bike, and now you're a community where seniors bike. And that changes everything. And so we get to shift the culture, and we get to have fun doing it, and we get to build power and friendship while doing it and enact changes.
Mm, very important. Because even where there is good transit, say, for example, you know, in the central parts of San Francisco or places like Boston and New York, sometimes you're there and you think, okay, well, where's the train? And where's the information about where the train is? And why am I waiting 25 minutes? I'm stood on a subway station and nothing's arrived. And you just think to yourself, crikey, there is infrastructure here, but it can be made so much better. So what kind of improvements do you think, to generalize hugely, what kind of improvements do you think are needed, Carter?
Yeah, so we need funding from the federal government. So our national government just essentially does not fund public transit in any meaningful level. So that's just right off the bat, that one. The other part is that many of our state governments don't fund transit. In fact, in California, where I live, our Governor Gavin Newsom, his administration just cut about $600 million from public transit funding, as well as hundreds of millions of dollars for affordable housing construction as well. Mm. And so one big part of this is transportation is fairly straightforward. If you legalize it and you fund it, you get it. If you don't fund it, you don't get it. And so we say, well, where is the bus? It's like, okay, well, have we hired the bus operators? Do we have the actual buses themselves? And if the answer is no, it's like, okay, well, are counties putting in money? Is our state putting in money? Where is it? And how much? You know, I think one thing that people talk about, to take an example, in California, you know, our high-speed rail project doesn't currently exist yet. They've built 100-something miles of the work. We've only spent $15 billion on it over the last 18 years to get it going. We spend $15 billion every 9 months on highways. So when they say, well, where's the high-speed rail? It's like, oh, all that money's in the highway budget. And if we shift the highway budget to the high-speed rail budget, we get the high-speed rail. And so a big thing that's really important is when someone's sitting there and saying, to use your word, crikey, where's the bus or where's the train, recognizing that they say, you know, someone should do something about it, and then have this, oh, wait, I'm somebody, you're somebody. And guess what? If you're sitting there waiting for the bus, you have time to call an elected official. You have time to talk to the other bus riders and organize with them. You have time because you are waiting there to start organizing and saying, hey, we're going to make this right now. This is my problem because I'm just stuck here waiting. I'm going to make this someone else's problem. There are people in power. There are people who have access to budgets and funding and things like that who can fix my problem. But until I make my problem their problem, this isn't going to get fixed. And that's why if you want to win, you've got to fight. A Guide to Effective Transportation Advocacy is there to help people understand how to go from, you know, it's not like you're watching a football match and you're saying, oh, Chelsea's having a hard time, I better get on the field. Like, they don't want you on the field. You're not allowed on the field. But in the real life, when you see the news, you should get on the field. You're in the field. You're in the news. You're in the game. So get out there and start playing your part. And that's why if you want to win, you've got to fight is really here to help people go from saying, well, gee, shucks, like someone should do that. Or, hey, referee, da-da-da. It's like, go fix that. You can go fix that.
Yeah, we are the people. We need to be empowered. Do you know what? Yeah. We need to take another break now. So we heard about what improvements are needed to transit. How do we get to those changes? I mean, there's a theme of your book, I believe, seems to be achieving your transportation dream means getting political. What do you mean by that?
Sure. So fundamentally, your transportation dreams involve other people. Whether or not that impacts them positively or negatively, the thing that you want changes the lives of other people, and that is by definition political. Politics is the fact that we as individuals and society shape each other. And so any sort of, oh, I wish it wasn't political, all that energy is wasted. It's political. And if you say, oh, I wish it was some technical process, blah, 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 that is a political desire. And getting it to be a technical process takes a political fight. So chapter one of If You Want to Win, You've Got to Fight is really focused on that. So for every one of your listeners who's cringing at the idea of politics and they say, oh, I hate it. I wish we were all on the same team. Chapter one is very much explicitly for you. And the big part, once you get beyond that, is people have to articulate their vision. It's very easy to say, you know what sucks? Everything. Okay, cool. It's very hard to get an MP to pass the I will fix everything bill. Or maybe that's actually an easy thing to pass. But, you know, you need to get specific. Much like if you're hungry and you say, well, what do I want? I want food. It's like, okay, good starting point. Let's get more specific. Because once you get more specific, you start identifying, well, who's in charge? You might say, I would like this piece of sidewalk to be fixed. And it's like, okay, well, there is someone in charge of that. And that person is not necessarily the city employee who is the one who literally pours the concrete. It is the person who decides how many city employees are there to pour the concrete. And it's the person who decides how much budget do we have for our concrete, or what is our process, or what's our permitting process like for that. And once you start articulating this and finding these points, then you could start to see, ah, I understand that such and such elected official who has a name, who has an address, who is a real physical person in this world, makes this decision, and that impacts my life in this way, which I either like or I don't like. And so then chapters 3, 4, and 5, and 6 really talk about, so, okay, what do you do with this information? How do you find other people who also care about this? And I get that in a world as tumultuous and dramatic as ours, fix this piece of sidewalk may not exactly be a rallying cry that gets everyone, you know, rioting in the streets. But you also don't need to do that. You know, you could stand by that piece of sidewalk and pass out a flyer to everyone who walks by that, and every single person pushing a, I think you call them prams, around it and saying, hey, didn't that suck? Like, wouldn't you like this fix? Here, sign this petition. We're sending a letter to the such and such person to get more funding to fix this. and you say, okay, now I'm going to reach out to the senior center, or the people with disabilities, or immigrant rights groups, or other groups throughout the area who also care. And a wonderful thing about transportation is it literally impacts everyone.
Mm.
And there are groups, even in my community, where I reached out to and I said, you know, there was an immigrant rights group and a refugee group that I partnered with on a street safety thing. And they said, yeah, you know, our people cross international borders to get to this community. And sometimes the most dangerous thing is just crossing the street now. And so how do we fix that? Let's make people's lives better. And so chapter 5 focuses on how to work in coalitions. And then a really key part about all this is sometimes your elected official says, great idea, I'm on board. Okay, cool. Well, where's your magic wand that fixes everything? And they say, oh, well, we don't actually have a magic wand. It's a whole process. And so chapter 6 focuses on what we call the inside and outside game of how do you work as someone who's not officially part of the process with people who are officially part of the process to get things changed? Because maybe your person will vote for it, but they're one of 5 people. And so you need to get the other 2 people to vote for it to have the majority. You know, figuring out what those types of numbers are. And so how to collaborate and make that happen is a key part to all this.
Now, this all sounds like completely good sense, but how do people apply that in their community? Have you used the lessons that you've had and you've spoken about in the book in helping people to achieve the results that they want?
Yeah, I use it every day, and I talk to people who use it every day. And one thing, you know, the book, you could read it in order, you could read it out of order based off of what you need, because some people have been doing this. Some people may have been organizers and other things, or union members, and they know some of this. You know, I think a big part is fundamentally recognizing that you are not alone. You might be alone in the moment of having that thought of, oh, I wish bus service on such and such way was faster at that moment. Okay, but there are other people on that bus with you. There are other people waiting for the bus. There are other people who would take the bus if it were better. Find them, talk to them, get their contact information, stay in community with them, host events, get loud, and you'll make changes. You know, I think helping people recognize that this stuff doesn't just automatically happen. It happens because we make it happen. And so, you know, I've talked to advocates across the country, interviewed dozens and dozens of people throughout the United States in big cities, small cities, red states, blue states, purple states, you know, all sorts of different communities about how they won and how they lost and incorporated that into this. And this comes up all the time. I mean, literally yesterday, we were talking about some things from chapter 6 of Inside Outside Game of there's a very technical issue going on in California right now where our governor is proposing cutting affordable housing and public transit funding. Governor Newsom is proposing that and saying, okay, well, the big egghead nerds know about this stuff, but most people on the street don't know. So how do we get this information from the inside out so that people get very, you know, appropriately loud? And stuff like that happens all the time, because I think one thing that happens, and maybe your listeners, if you're a listener to the station, you are probably familiar with being the one person who knows the thing, you know, speaks out and says, hey, this thing should be different this way. We should have the bike racks here, not there. And someone says, okay, good to know. You, Mark, think that. It's like, okay, how do we get 100 people to agree? How do you get 500 people to agree? Because if all it took was Mark being right to change the world would be a much better place. But it takes more than Mark and me and any you individual listeners being right and saying a thing. It takes us all doing it in general.
It's about building teams, isn't it, and coalitions.
Yeah, you can't just say, well, I kicked the football once, I dribbled down the field once, why haven't I won the World Cup yet? It's like, well, so you have to keep doing it. You have to do it with the whole team. You have a bunch of matches, and fun fact, there's an opposing side, so you have to figure out how to work around them. And much like how to win the World Cup is something that people can learn and study and get better at, how to be a successful advocate is something we can learn and study and get better at.
And your book does that absolutely beautiful. Now, we're going to get to the last question here because we're running out of time, very sadly. But a lot of people know what's going on in the US right now. So just kind of projecting forward from this presidency, if we can call it that, do you think transit has got a chance of being able to improve in the future if people read your book and take action?
And the good thing is that there are literally millions of people who want the world to be a better place. And if you want to win, you've got to fight. A Guide to Effective Transportation Advocacy is there to help both newbies get started and, you know, veterans tune up. And I think something that's very important to keep in mind, especially in a world where we have a fascistic president, is, you know, Donald Trump can't stop you from getting a bike lane in your community. Donald Trump can't stop you from getting your sidewalk fixed. There's a lot of things that he can make harder and he can stop, But whether or not your bus stop has a bench is not up to Donald Trump. That's up to you, and that's up to your organizing. And so remembering that we can and that we must, and we organize to fight for those local wins, that makes the bigger wins possible. That when you win local change for your transportation issues, that makes it easier to pressure your Congress member or your senator or your governor. And organizing begets more organizing. That power is something that builds when you use it well politically and when you do it correctly, which if you want to win, you've got to fight, talks you through. And so what we've learned in the last several years is the United States government is capable of doing gigantic things. Generally not good things, but it's capable of doing gigantic things very quickly. And it's like, okay, well, it's good to know we can do things big and fast. How do we make sure we're doing good things big and fast? It's like, well, put people in charge who want to do good and big and fast things. And I think people kind of are recognizing that a lot of the world of politics is not so squishy and playing nice. You know, the gloves are off. And it's like, okay, so we need to throw some sharp elbows. We need to do the work ourselves. And if we want to win, we've got to fight. So let's do it.
It is so refreshing to hear your optimism, but you know we're out of time already.
Great chatting with you.
Yeah, thank you so much to Garza Levin for joining us from Oakland, California.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
You're very, very welcome. You can find Carter's book, If You Want to Win, You've Got to Fight, A Guide to Effective Transportation Advocacy, on all good online bookstores. His website is carterlavin.com. That's CARTERLAVIN.com. And he's on social media too. We'll be doing more chatting art, transport, communications, history right here next week. So do please join us then.